storm cloud stock discovery. I'm Pete Combs, and this is Aero News. It's Friday, June 30th, 2006. The Space Shuttle Discovery is poised on the pad for tomorrow afternoon's launch. And so far, NASA officials say there are no major problems that might get in the way, except for one. The weather. Peter King covers the Kennedy Space Center for CBS News Radio. He joins us now from Cape Canaveral in Florida.
Well, typical Florida weather means afternoon thunderstorms almost no matter where you are in the state, and that's what they're forecasting. Advil clouds, which means lightning, electrically charged clouds in the area, some rain, maybe some thunderstorms, way too close to the launch pad, way too close to the shuttle landing facility. So they're thinking that it's going to do this Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So that's not a good thing if they're trying to launch. The plan would be that they would try to launch Saturday or Sunday, hopefully Saturday. If they don't get off the ground Sunday, they would stand down for a day and then try again Monday.
Well, they do have a nice wide window in terms of the days they can launch.
Oh, they've got a 19-day launch window that opens up on Saturday. And on top of that, and this is really one of the key things, in that 19-day window, it gets earlier by about 22 or 23 minutes every day. So the further it moves up in the day, the less of a chance there is that they'll run into those afternoon thunderstorms.
Peter, what is the mood among the crew and the technicians who are working on this launch, given that there's been so much talk about new foam delamination issues regarding those ice frost ramps?
I think just about everybody's been really, really upbeat about it. I mean, nobody's avoiding talking about the foam issue, but you know, astronaut crews generally, as a rule, will tend to speak up privately if there is something wrong, and would never publicly, I don't think, that they would refuse to fly if there was a problem. That said, I think if there were a problem, they certainly would have told their mission managers, and Wayne Hale, the shuttle program manager, and Mike Griffin, the NASA administrator. They have not done that. Commander Steve Lindsay and the rest of them have all said, we're ready to go, we're ready to fly, we understand there's a risk, we think they've mitigated the risk, and we're ready to do this. The program management people, for the most part, same thing.
Now, that having been said, the shuttle's engineering head, that would be Charlie Camarda, who was on the last mission as a payload specialist, Charlie has been reassigned either by his request or by someone's design because he apparently spoke up about some safety concerns.
Well, actually, we're hearing that the reassignment actually had nothing to do with that, and it was more of a personal disagreement between Charlie Camarda and his boss, Mike Coates, both of them former astronauts. And Charlie actually clarified that late yesterday. So that has less to do with what he was saying in terms of safety issues, more to do with a disagreement there, and you know, one of those management employee kinds of things that happens in every workplace. Charlie Camarda will remain on the mission management team for this flight, however.
We'll talk more with CBS News radio correspondent Peter King in just a moment. But first, this Aerocast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V220 and V300T engines.
When was the last time you checked under the hood of your car? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as simple and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V220 and V300T from Aircraft Engine Services. They're made of aluminum, so you get the best power-to-weight ratio in general aviation. They're FADEC controlled. What about your new glass cockpit? The engine management system works seamlessly with most multifunction displays, so you can get minute-by-minute updates on just how well your V engine is performing. Add it up. A lighter, more powerful engine. Liquid cooling to reduce sudden temperature changes inside the engine. FADEC control. True glass cockpit interfacing. And an engine that runs more quietly and with less vibration than other piston engines. The the AES V220 and V300T. As simple as a car's engine, but oh, so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at VAircraftEngine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SRV G2. Think flying is a bit too complicated for you to learn or a little too expensive for your lifestyle? Think again. The SRV G2 offers the exceptional design and performance equated with owning a Cirrus, yet at a price that can make your dreams of flying a new reality. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to our Aero News special feature. I'm Pete Combs, along with CBS News radio correspondent Peter King at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. We've been talking about the safety concerns focusing on possible thunderstorms at launch time, but that's not the only issue. Peter, the other thing is the issue of the delamination and the ice frost ramps. There are, I believe, 37 of them in that 15-story tall external fuel tank. How big a risk is that if you try to compare that to the risk of the phone delamination that killed Columbia?
Well, that's a really good question, and I talked to Wayne Hale about that last week, among other things, and he said they have no numbers in terms of the odds, you know, 1 in 100, 1 in 200, whatever, but I've heard from other people with some knowledge that the risk may well be as high as 1 in 100 chances of a catastrophic probable failure. And I say catastrophic probable because that is how the ice frost ramps foam areas were termed in official terms. Now, Wayne Hale has been saying, well, we overstated that concern because we wanted to make sure we didn't forget to do something about that on future flights. How much credence anyone puts in any of this, you know, that's up to you. And of course, you know, I have limited knowledge, so I don't know that I'm the right person to make any judgment on it. But those are some of the things we've heard.
Well, one thing we do know with fair certainty is that NASA has a much better handle on how to deal with some of the problems that come up from foam delamination. Certainly, they have some new procedures in place.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And remember, they've just made the biggest aerodynamic change on the tank and on the entire shuttle stack for this flight, and that is they removed the foam from the PAL ramp, the area where it broke off last year and nearly hit Discovery within the first couple of minutes after launch. So that's a huge change and a pretty good-sized chunk of foam they've removed. I think altogether they have removed somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 to 37 pounds of that foam insulation. And again, plans are in the works to redesign the ice frost ramp areas so that there won't be any foam, or there will be a greatly reduced amount of foam in those areas on future flights, just not starting with this one, probably three or four tanks down the road.
Peter, let's talk for now for a moment, if we could, about this particular mission. For the first time in a long time since Columbia's demise, we have three IS astronauts who will be on board the space station.
Absolutely. One of the crew members, it's going to be seven going up, six coming down on Discovery, and one of the crew members, Thomas Ryder, is an ESA astronaut, the European Space Agency. They will drop him off the International Space Station. We expect that he is going to fly about a four-month mission as part of the three-person crew, and you're right. Ever since the first crew came home after the Columbia accident, it's been two-person crews, which is about just over 3 years now. So you can bet that the ISS crew aboard right now, Jeff Williams and Pavel Vinogradov, the Russian commander, are going to be very, very glad to have a third person on board to help share that workload.
We'll hear the rest of this special feature in just a moment. You're listening to Aero News.
When you can't be flying, you'd rather be, well, flying. Wings to Adventure Television is the next best thing. Hi, I'm Tom Gresham. Come join us as we fly old classics and new speedsters. We hit the best aviation museums and reveal fly-in hideaways. And it's all shot in breathtaking high-definition video. As host and producer, I get to pick what's on the show. So I always have fun, and I guarantee that you will too. It's on the Outdoor Channel. Airtimes and days are at wingstoadventure.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up today's ANN special feature. I'm Pete Combs, along with CBS News radio correspondent Peter King at the Kennedy Space Center on Cape Canaveral. In our last segment, we talked about Saturday's mission to the International Space Station, but for just a moment, let's focus on Discovery itself. I understand that the crew is looking forward to a quiet flight away from the space station or while they're docked. What do they plan to do with Discovery?
Well, I don't know where you heard quiet flight from, Pete. They really jam-pack these flight plans and put a lot in there. But while they're there, a number of things. They're bringing up about 5,000 or 6,000 pounds of cargo, supplies, food, clothing, other kinds of equipment, experiments in the big cargo carrier. The NASA acronym is MPLM. They'll take that out of the shuttle's cargo bay, dock it to the space station, and then it'll take several days to unload that. In the meantime, when that gets emptied out, they'll start loading in trash and other unneeded material from the space station to bring back down to Earth, because they're having, pardon the irony, a bit of a space problem on the ISS. That is, stuff is accumulating. They have no way to get it out. They just don't toss it out into space. Some of it they can pack into those Progress cargo ships, and they're released and burned up in the atmosphere. But for the really big items, they have to wait for the shuttle to bring it back. So I know they're going to be very, very happy to offload a lot of that to come back down here. There are two planned spacewalks, possibly a third. There'll be doing some repairs outside the International Space Station to that mobile launch platform, the rail car that goes back and forth. They're replacing some cable assemblies, that sort of thing. They're also going to test out the new boom that attaches to the end of the space shuttle's robot arm. That's one of the new inspection and repair techniques that's being tried. They want to see if an astronaut can actually stand on the end of that platform and if it will be stable. It's not a safety issue, really. It's more of a stability issue, and that would enable astronauts to do underbelly repairs and things like that. So they're going to test that out. A third spacewalk, if they can stretch their consumables for an extra day, that would be to try some of the shuttle repair techniques that have been worked on in the last couple of years.
You know, I just thought about what I said, quiet spaceflight. You're right, there is no such thing. That was the headline in the Washington Post today. The final thing I want to touch on is the amount of work you can get done with 9 people all together on the space station, as opposed to the two-man placekeeping crew that has been on since the death of Columbia.
Well, you've got to remember that when they have 9 people aboard station, they're not there doing space station experiments and things. They're basically going to be concentrating on getting the stuff from the shuttle into the station, getting the other stuff from the station into the shuttle, offloaded to bring back to Earth, and doing all the other tasks that are associated with the shuttle mission. Most of the space station tasks are handled by the crew of the station, Jeff Williams and Pavel Vinogradov, and of course orientation for Thomas Ryder, who will be living there for the next 4 months. So a lot of the station stuff, the science and that sort of thing, that sort of goes by the wayside for a few days. They take care of this pressing matter of getting the shuttle offloaded and then offloading the trash from the station onto the shuttle. So that kind of takes precedence.
The world's most expensive recycling project.
Well, it certainly is, but you know something? It's better than just tossing it out into space and letting it become space junk and to become dangerous to other spacecraft and that sort of thing.
Well said. Peter, the last thing here is the resumption of regular spaceflight with the shuttle fleet should everything go okay. If you could give me just a very brief glimpse down the road, what are we looking at in the next couple of years?
Well, they're hoping to fly two more flights before the end of this year, including one in late August. 16 to 17 flights to complete the International Space Station by 2010. An additional flight that would go service the Hubble Space Telescope one last time before they retire the shuttle in 2010.
My friend and colleague, Peter King, covering the NASA launch of Discovery at Cape Canaveral. Peter, thanks again.
Thank you, Peter.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. For CBS News radio correspondent Peter King, I'm Pete Combs. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the airport.